Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. My name is Craig Telfer and on this occasion I am joined by my close associate Sean McGuigan.
Hello there.
And you know what happens when the Charlie Bucket and Grandpa Joe of the Terrace get together. That's right, we are on a trip to a factory owned by an eccentric but well-meaning confectioner to see lower league Scottish football made in real time, and who knows, we might get to steal some lemonade and almost get slaughtered by a large fan in the process.
You know something, I did wonder, because I read an interview for that kind of Willy Wonka experience. It was an interview with a woman that was captured. She was dressed as an Oompa Loompa.
Played the Oompa Loompa, yes. Kirsty Patterson. I read the same thing as well.
I did wonder if you would have went down that route, but I wasn't entirely sure how you would do it, but you've managed it. You've managed it. Well done.
I've managed it, yes. I think that Grandpa Joe, lazy as fuck, just staying in his bed all day with three other horrible old people. I'd hate to see what the nick of what's going on under that duvet looks like. And all of a sudden, his horrible haircutted grandson gets a ticket to a once-in-a-lifetime trip to a chocolate factory, and straight away he's up singing and dancing. How dare you? How dare you? I don't know if you saw the thing. It was a woman in the United States that was done for benefits. Something like that. She was claiming disability. And the use she was as a tree throwing contest. Pictures of her a tree throwing contest, and they're able to use that as evidence against her.
You really need to be as fit as a fiddle to be throwing trees.
Trees are trees, huge. As far as I'm aware, yeah, trees very huge, very difficult to even pick up, let alone get them a competitive distance. So, nevertheless, yeah, she was found out.
I'd imagine the British equivalent would be if you were off work. And said that you couldn't work for whatever reason because you weren't fit enough. But then you were spotted in that cheese rolling competition that they have in England.
Aye, or one of those things, you know, those things in the north of England where it's about 3,000 people want to take a ball from one part of the town to the other. If your boss saw you punching someone in the back of the head when you're claiming to be off work, you wouldn't have a leg to stand on.
No, that's you. That's you. You're in big trouble.
Yes, so that's perhaps the most topical one of these that we'll do. It's too good an opportunity with the Willy's chocolate experience and a lot of the video content that's been coming out the back of it. Did you see when the Moz confronted the guy who runs the House of Illuminati? Did you see that?
I've only read articles, seen pictures, but I did go on their Facebook page. That was very, very funny. I haven't seen any videos, unfortunately, but I'll go and look for them. I don't know what it is about exhibitions that are clearly a scam. Normally, mm-hmm. you have to wait until It's normally Christmas. Like normally you get like a good
couple
of
Christmas. Oh, the Winter Wonderland scams.
Yeah, they're brilliant. So delighted to see them coming out in February. That's something to keep us going until next Christmas. But there's something about them that is just very, very funny.
Yeah, I think obviously the locality of this one, it's in a Scottish context. Normally you hear about the Fyre Festival and like Burning Man and so on. I think they were cited in the article that you and I read earlier today. But the fact it was in Glasgow and just it looked so shit. And the fact as well, there were so many rubes that fell for it. I mean, you go on the website, you look at the images, they're obviously AI-generated images, and the text around them is just complete gibberish. They're approximations of the English language. How would anyone part 35 quid and take their family along to see that? And I saw as well that someone set up a crowdfunder, a GoFundMe page, to compensate the children who were disappointed and lost out that people are paying money towards. You should have learned your lesson the first time.
In fairness, I would have paid £35 to attend, but only to watch people being miserable and angry and children crying. Like that was probably worth £35 to see the anger and rancor that was caused by it.
Did you see the unknown, the thing that was like hiding behind the mirror? Did you see that? Nope. They created a brand new character for it, and it was basically someone wearing a mask and a sort of a cape that came out from behind a mirror. It was a fictional character made exclusively for Willie's chocolate experience. Nothing to do with the Roald Dahl book, nothing to do with the film from the 70s or the Wonka or anything to do anything. It's not part of the Willy Wonka canon. This is purely made up for this Willy's chocolate experience. It's effectively like a phantom that hides in walls and steals chocolate.
You cannot take Willy Wonka and base your experience on it and then make up your own characters.
They did. If you've got a problem about it, Sean, go and complain to the House of Illuminati, the people that were running it, and you'll see all these, it's quite funny, these Facebook moths sort of with their camera phones out, almost like a pedo had moved in next door and they're around there to kick him out.
Remember that happened at your last place?
Yes! That was really funny. I mean, I might as well tell the story about it if I've not told it already. We've got another 5 minutes till we need to actually get in and talk about the football anyway. But what had happened here was, this would have been the summer of 2020. I was staying in Falkirk at the time. And for anyone from the local area who knows where Falkirk, it was next to the Carron Co-op. It was in the newer houses that were built there. At the roundabout near Bainsford, New Carron, takes you down towards Stenismuir. So I was staying there and I was seeing a girl at the time. And I remember going out, she stayed in like steps. So I remember driving out to see her, had a nice night with her, and then came back. And when I came back, like, I had a couple of text messages from my brother. And he was telling me, like, there's something happening close to your house. And so I was kind of like flicking through the text. You know, you shouldn't be doing it when you're driving, but just having a look at the text messages coming in. And then sure enough, just as I come down, the street is absolutely, it's cordoned off by police. And basically, I think it was a known sex offender had been moved into a property there. And the public were not happy about it. And someone was live streaming it on Facebook. I mean, it was pretty uneventful. Let's be honest. I think somebody was going to be moving in, but there was no one there. I think a rumour had circulated, police had got involved. Nothing interesting happened, but it's very interesting to see that sort of thing happening in real time, just yards from your house.
It's not what you expect to find when you come home in an evening.
No, it's not. And just say, thank God it was somebody else's house and not mine. It'd be horrendous if it had been a case of mistaken identity.
I'm sure there was I think it was in Portsmouth, and there was like a rumour had spread that a paedophile had moved in, but it turned out it was a paediatrician. But they'd like panned his windows in and kind of daubed paint all over his door.
That's the problem. The first syllable of that word's a bit of a misnomer, isn't it? You put the word paed in front of something, you're asking for bother. When we were listening to a podcast about these sort of like vigilante paedophile hunters, I mean, we're really going off tangent here. We're supposed to have a mailbag. We're supposed to have a laugh talking about the lower leagues. Just leave it at that. Just nobody needs to hear about this podcast. The Wolfpack, and I'm not talking about the WCW version, that just basically posed as underage people to snare these wrong-uns, and then they'd present a dossier in front of them and corner them and live stream it.
I mean, it seems very effective. I'm aware of them. It seems to work, certainly. that lures them out.
Yes, but you kind of got to ask yourself the mentality of somebody. So what are you up to tonight? I'm just going to the gym. What about yourself? Just going online to pose as a 12-year-old boy.
I mean, in fairness, as much as I'm saying it's effective, if somebody asked me to join, I would say no. I would say, listen, I'm a busy man.
Yeah, I've got enough on plate. A view for the terraces back. That's taking up a lot of my time. I'm not able to go online to the same extent as I would like to.
Maybe if they asked me to join between May and August, maybe I could help out on a temporary basis.
Do you want to get into the podcast then, Sean?
Yes, I probably should.
The podcast that Sean and I are recording, this is part two of our Lower League mailbag. We mentioned last week there was dozens of questions that came in, a lot of them pretty good. So we did half of them last week and we're going to do half of them this week. If you thought that we were going to be talking about Stennis Muir 1, Clyde 6, then yes, we will be discussing it, but it's going to be on our Patreon. If you think I'm going to relive that match for free, you must be mad. You're going to have to get your wallets out and listen to Sean and I talk about that for probably the most remarkable unexpected result in the whole of the SPFL so far this season. We'll be discussing that on Patreon. But for now, it's mailbag. Are you good otherwise, Sean? Just we always check
in. Yeah, very much so. Absolutely. Absolutely. You?
No, I've had flat problems today. Oh. I won't go into them. I've shared them with you. I've got a leak in my flat. I don't know who's the person that stays above me. The flat is empty. There are some cowboy builders in there who told me they would fix the problem. They haven't, and I'm just worried that... I'm just worried. As simple as that. No, I thought you were going to say some conciliatory there, Sean.
Oh, no, sorry. I couldn't hear you. You paused.
Oh, right. Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Let's get on with the podcast.
Yeah,
let's get on with the podcast. That's nearly 10 minutes of talking about the Willy Wonka experience and coming home to finding a very angry mob live streaming a house just yards from your own. This first question, Sean, this is from Scotch and Scars. Which youth prospect at your respective clubs did you think was nailed on to be a star but ended up falling by the wayside for one reason or another?
I would probably go for it. So I had two. So one... That's far more up to date, I suppose. And one was from the early 2000s. So in terms of one from the earlier one, I suppose, the fantastic surname. You ever heard of Ryan Blackadder?
Yes, I'm sure he went on to play for East Fife, I think.
Yeah, that's right. But it's like, I mean, he came into Antonio Calderon's team in about 2002-ish, I think. He was 18, Middler Park. And bear in mind, it was a good third tier side that we had at that time. Some talented Scottish players, some maverick Argentinians, I suppose. But he looked a real player. And I appreciate that when they come through and it doesn't always, like the career doesn't always go in a kind of upward trajectory. But even at 18, he looked like he had more than enough about him to be a good third tier player. Ended up playing for, in fact, he got picked for Scotland under 21s at that point. Ended up only being at Starts Park for about 18 months. He spoke highly of Calderon. I think there may have been some issues with his attitude, I suppose, or certain rumours about his attitude, I should say. Ended up going to Hamilton. I mean, Raith got promoted. He went back down a league to Hamilton. They then got promoted. Didn't they play too many games for them, as you say, down to East Fife. But within... I think within 7 years of coming through at Starts Park, so maybe 25, 26, he was playing for Glenrothes. And you think, like, how on earth could that happen? How do you go from being a player that looked like a real standout at a third tier, Scotland under 21s, and then you're playing for actually a really bad, like not even a good junior team? It didn't make a lick of sense.
I think it'd be interesting to know, like, I'm sure that there's been studies being done, but why players don't make it, guys who are supremely talented and stand out head and shoulders above every other boy at their age range, why they don't make it and other boys do. And I'm surely it's just up here. Mm-hmm. Obviously there are other factors about fitness and so on, but I think it must be up here. Like if you have to have the desire to do it and just think that when you get signed for a big club or when you break into the Raith Rovers first team, you've not made it. This is the start of it. And sometimes people can think, well, now I'm in the first team, I don't need to try as hard. And then you see them sinking down and they get distracted by things that happen elsewhere, off the park, nights out and so on. It's disappointing. It can be disappointing to see.
Because it would have been good to have a really talented Scottish player called Blackadder. It would have been a lot of fun there.
Yes, I'm trying to think of the headlines. Rackadder as he scores loads of goals.
And he was playing next to the fourth. So again, there could have been some kind of wordplay there as well. I don't know.
Blackadder goes fourth.
Yes.
Then he scores a goal, Blackadder the third and so on, etc. Never seen Blackadder before.
Oh, really?
No.
Well, I mean, it's reasonably good, so I can imagine that why you would sidestep it.
No, I'd be watching, and this is something that Craig Cairns recommended to me a couple of years ago. It's a program called Ouija's. You get it on Amazon Prime.
Right.
It's about, as the name might suggest, a group of young people that are trying to make their way in Glasgow. It was made for a budget of about £90 for the entire season, and it shows. There's one bit, because I've watched it loads of times now, so I'm actually less interested in what's going on in it than some of the wee like continuity gaffes and production gaffes. And there's a bit where they're filming two girls and a guy that share a flat together. And there's a picture frame and there's nothing in it. And to me, that's just something. We need to put something on this table here. Can we put a picture in it? No, we don't have one. So it just is, you can sort of see it just slightly out of focus. Photo frame that's in it. And I can see what they're trying to do. I think that's, I can see the ambition, but they were very, very hamstrung by a lack of money and a bad script. As well, yeah. I don't want to denigrate everyone because we are in the same sort of industry, but it's just this is Craig Cairns was right to recommend it to me, very grateful for that from him.
I mean, you kind of brought that up as if it was a reason that you hadn't watched Blackadder. I mean, the last season of Blackadder was about 30 years ago.
Yeah, was that one they go over the top?
Yes,
I've seen that. I think I remember watching a countdown of Britain's funniest TV moments. Obviously, that wasn't in.
That must have been
Britain's best TV moments. I can't remember, was it number one?
Oh, it would have been bloody Del Boy falling through a bar or something.
Yes, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. That's very funny. That's very funny. I think my favourite all-time comedy? It'll be from The Office. I think the always bit that I laugh at the most will be when David Brent addresses the Swindon lot for the first time. Do you know the scene I'm talking about?
I have watched Office, but just once. So like, you'll have watched it like several dozen times.
I've watched it hundreds of times. But the bit when he's trying to ingratiate himself with the new Swindon lot after the Slough and Swindon branches have merged, and he makes a joke. I've always been in paper. My parents owned a paper shop. Till it blew away. I find that sort of stuff hilarious. I find those jokes really, really funny. But obviously it doesn't, and there's no one laughing at it. But nevertheless, very, very funny scene. I actually had to think about this, Sean, in terms of like good young players that have come through at Stenny, and there hasn't been that many. Most of the good players that we've had have been on loan. So I'm kind of going to focus on a couple that spring to mind. There's one boy called Scott McManus who came around, it must be in the year about 2007, 2008. And he was young boy, quite sprightly striker, could play up front, could play out wide. And he had sort of like blonde highlights through his hair. And this is after we had sold David Templeton to Heart of Midlothian, who I think Templeton, injuries obviously played a factor. I think Templeton's had a decent career over the piece. Got to play for Rangers, got to play for the team you support. So I always think that's great if you get the chance to do that. Not everyone can do that. But Scott McManus was, apparently he had gone trial at Rangers. He might have been Walter Smith's grandson or some of you think he was related to Walter Smith in some way. And I remember him looking quite spry, but it never quite happened for him. And I think he went to Stranraer for a season and then just disappeared out completely altogether. So I hope he's still well. I imagine he'll just be a wee bit younger than me if he's still kicking a ball. But that was someone I thought that when you see him for the first time, this guy's really good. But then he just becomes just another jobbing player. I'm trying to think because you'll never heard of most of these guys. I'll tell you, the ones who I thought were good because they were both at a season apart from each other. One was Paul McMullen, who we had on loan from Celtic. Now, again, McMullen, you could say he's still playing football. He's playing it over in Ireland, played with Dundee. I think he was sort of in that Josh Mullen, John Baird, Darren Huckerby type when you're a really good championship player but not quite good enough for the Premiership. But I remember when he came to us, I thought this guy's an absolute superstar. Really, really enjoyed watching him. I always thought his height and build might count against him. But in terms of just his bravery on the ball, his gallusness, and just wanted to take people on and run at people, I thought I was really excited by him. And the other one is Willis Furtado, who a player that you might know as well. I remember seeing him coming into Stensfield and thinking, what on earth are you doing here? Just how on earth is this sort of like this Frenchman like pitched up in Stenny? I think he was quite good. I think he was perhaps a wee bit distracted with too many nights out in Stirling, which might have curtailed his chances at Stenny. But he played at Raith Rovers, and now I've just checked he's playing his football in Malta. So it's still good to see that he's kicking a ball. But I remember McMullen and Furtado thinking, I think these guys have got a big future. And I suppose they are still playing, so am I disappointed by it? I don't know. I'd actually misread the question. I just thought it was generally a player that you like. So I had to really think on my feet when I was reading that out to you. I was going to go for Harry Cochrane was the one I was going to mention. He's not a Divistani. He's absolutely not a Divistani.
Furtado was a funny one because I'm trying to think where Raith got him from.
It was Stenny.
Did he go from Stenny to Raith immediately? I had in my head that he hadn't been playing for a bit, or he'd been playing Airdrie team.
He went to Airdrie after Stenny.
Right. Because he basically, when he rocked up at Starts Park, despite the fact that he would have been doing full-time training at the time, within maybe 6 weeks of being in Kirkcaldy, he'd put on maybe a stone and a half.
Aye.
But the flat that he stayed in, that the club owned, was right across from a really good chip shop called Valenti's. Apparently he was there every night, just every night for his dinner. Because he scored an absolutely incredible goal at Hampden against Queen's Park. I think Raith won 5-2 that day. And I was like, my goodness, here's the kind of final piece here. Raith are going to win the league. Ayr United are going to finish second. And he will be the kind of final piece of the puzzle that will get us over the line and win the league. And within kind of 6 or 7 weeks, he was so out of shape. It was unbelievable. I'm like, he isn't the final piece of the puzzle.
So that was his problem at Stensfield. Too many nights out in Stirling, his problem at Raith Rovers, too many nights out in Valenti's.
Going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
The last thing you want to hear when you need your auto insurance most is,
thank you for calling. Please listen to your list of 46 possible service options.
Which is why when you choose USAA auto insurance, you'll get great service that is easy and reliable. 24/7 online service for claims, access to roadside assistance, and more. All at the touch of a button. Start getting the service you deserve. Get a quote today. USAA. Ability to receive a quote depends on membership eligibility. Membership eligibility and product restrictions apply and are subject to change. USAA means United Services Automobile Association and its affiliate, San Antonio, Texas.
Simple as that. We'll move on to this question from Mark McDonald. With the League One and League Two titles wrapped up already, careful, Mark. Do you think that the relegation teams in the playoffs have an edge at playing more competitive games in the run-up to the end of the season? Teams like Peterhead and Accies have very little to play for until then, while the race to avoid the drop in the Championship and League One looks like it's going down to the wire.
I think in theory it has a point.
I don't know if it works in practice.
Nah, and even like the stuff that we've said about playoffs in the past, about if you go into them with a bit of momentum behind you, a bit of kind of wind in your sails, then surely you have a better chance. I don't know if that's the case either. Like you saw, like remember when Brechin like won the playoffs and got promoted to the Championship, they'd won something like, I think they won one in their last six games or something.
Yeah.
I don't think there is one kind of cast iron theory or suggestion about how you go into the playoffs and what's the best way to go into them. I mean, I think a lot of what he says holds water, but I'm not so sure. I must admit, I've said for the majority of this season that I think one team will get promoted from League One, but I just think it's because the quality, I know the Championship isn't of the highest quality, but I think there's far fewer terrible teams in the Championship this season than maybe certainly last season. So I think whoever finishes ninth will probably win the playoffs.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I think that if you kind of look at the teams, I suppose though, I mean, who's in pole position to finish ninth? Inverness, Caledonian Thistle at the moment, sort of Dunfermline. If they were to come up against like the likes of Alloa, Montrose, the teams, how would you fancy that to go? Because I mean, like Alloa are doing really, really well at the moment under Andy Graham. But I do think there is a big jump between, there is obviously a big jump between divisions, but I think that other than Arbroath, who really seemed like an outlier in the Championship this season, I mean, did you get a chance to watch the highlights of the game against Queen's Park?
Still not watched it yet.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. That's dog shit. There's no other way to describe it. Embarrassing. Absolutely embarrassing. Apparently, I was reading on Pye and Bovril, they set up in a 4-6-0 formation and still got done in the counter. Still got good. She was like, what happened? What happened, Arbroath? But yeah, Arbroath seem a bit of an outlier. I think they're favourites to go down, especially after that result. Who knows, he might be Ray Throwers the one from Friday night.
I'm worried about it. I'm worried about the, I know it's a total cliche, but a reaction from them, yes, on Friday evening.
I don't think the only reaction you're going to get is Ali Adams tweeting laughing face emojis after Max Boric chucks in yet another goal. But yeah, and I think that I can see Falkirk will go up. I don't think anyone else will follow him up. I'd like to see Alloa go up, obviously, because I'd like Montrose to go up as well, because I'm a big fan of both Andy Graham and Stuart Peach, respectively. In League, the gap between League One and League Two, however, you're going to imagine it's Annan Athletic that are going to finish in ninth place. They're going to come up against the likes of Dumbarton, Spartans, Peterhead, maybe Stenismuir if something terrible happens. And I'd fancy Annan are playing quite well at the moment. I think they've picked up a couple of decent results, but even so, I'd still fancy whoever the League Two team to beat them.
That certainly feels a lot closer. So in that scenario, it almost feels like those playoff positions, they're not set in stone, but it feels like they are kind of nailed on more so than maybe the League One places, because that's probably two from any three when you chuck in Cove. But I kind of agree with Mark, but I don't think there's ever a cut and dry theory about who is going to be the favourites. Well, we know who the favourites. You could pick a favourite in the playoffs. It very often doesn't work out that way for no reason. You can kind of stick a pin in.
I wonder if there's ever a team, and I need to go back and check, who absolutely were flying as they went into the playoffs and got fucking smashed in them in the first game. I need to go back and check. I didn't do that for this, so I'm sorry.
Remember the season that Cowdenbeath managed to beat Cove? I mean, Cowdenbeath had been bottom for a long, long time. Cove Rangers were winning every single week, and yet Cowdenbeath were still able to beat them. Was it 3-2? Maybe 0-0? Up in Aberdeen and then 3-2 at Central Park.
Oh, I remember the two things I remember in that match was like a goalkeeper getting flattened and someone scoring from about 60 yards, and then a stricken Brian Gilfillan waving his crutches, telling the Cove directors to get back up the road. That's the only things I really remember from those games. But they did the same against like East Kilbride as well, counting, I think, successive years, didn't they? They managed to win the playoffs.
They did, yep.
So who knows? I definitely need to go back and check that. But I think it's, in theory, if you went into the playoffs, you'd want to be going there into a bit of form. And I hate using this term as a bit of a lottery. Maybe that's it, Sean. We're coming up for the playoffs have been on the go since what, 2005, 2006. So maybe as we come up for the 20th anniversary, it's time to sit down and analyse the playoffs. Maybe that's, we could do that for a podcast. That's another idea for a podcast. But we'll talk about that off here.
Craig Anderson must have a spreadsheet somewhere that analyses all of that.
He must have a spreadsheet. If he doesn't have a spreadsheet, I'd be, you're slacking a wee bit, Craig. Is everything okay? And then we learn. So that's a callback to a joke from yesterday. He's like, with Craig Anderson, it's like very, very rarely, and I'd say very rarely, it's like there's, you're probably more likely to die in an aeroplane than Craig Anderson is to likely to get something wrong. But when he does get something wrong, you think, oh, something's up here. You're losing your touch, big man. Everyone okay? Everyone okay up here? Sean, we'll move on to the question of John Fraser. Nice and easy one. In a Royal Rumble of lower league managers, who is coming out winner and who'd be out first?
So, in terms of winners, I've got a short list of three.
Okay.
I would imagine that you have at least one of these.
I just basically went for one, the winner and the loser. So give me your three and I'll tell you if my guy's on it.
Right, okay. So in terms of aggression, In terms of who's the hardest, yes, it has to be Duncan Ferguson.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely, it has to be.
I've gone for Duncan Ferguson, yeah. I just think, I mean, the guy's what, he's like 6'4". You ever see that video of him? I mean, he's shot like on a very, very old camera phone, but he's on the punch bag when he's training at Everton. No. He's about to take the thing off the ceiling. He's absolutely, absolutely going for it. And I mean, I know he's a bit older now, but I think that underneath that cheery banter boy persona, he would garrote you.
Was it Stephen Everson that he was strangling one day during a game of football?
That's right. Yeah. Aye. I mean, his hands are enormous. But he's the size of Duncan Ferguson, actually, he is probably big enough at 6'4 to be the size of a professional wrestler as well. So sign him up, Vince.
I have him, and I can understand why. I did have another couple of options. One is just Dick Campbell, less aggression, more. Just more mass.
He would go in there as a legend. That's something like the WWE like to do, is to put legends in the Royal Rumble occasionally. And they come down, he'll get his entrance and so on with a cap, throw it off into the crowd, and then he'll get to do a couple of moves, and maybe do a couple of moves, get his spotlight, and then get chucked out. So I don't think he'd win it, but I think he would get a chance to express himself.
I mean, all my wrestling kind of comparisons are from the early 90s, and I suppose he is a bit like... Hurricane and Typhoon of the natural disasters. Difficult to eliminate.
It's Earthquake
and Typhoon. What did I say? Hurricane.
You are getting a measure. Every single person, there's like the Venn diagram of people who like wrestling to listen to the terrace is a concentric circle. And you get people, it's actually Earthquake and Typhoon.
Sorry. That's terrible for me. The other one, like moving on quickly, the other one. Now, this isn't somebody who is either hard or has a lot of mass, but I do think he would go in there with a plan. And I think Michael McIndoe, now you know how in the Royal Rumble, you have to go over the top rope.
Yeah.
Over the top rope and then 2 feet hit the ground. What if you go under and then he would hide under the ring until there's maybe only one or two left?
That's right. Spring out. You see that a lot. I can imagine him trying to like he gets put in there with a really big guy. He tries to bribe them or something like that, or promise a 15% return on their investment. Something like that, and then he gets out. That's actually a very good point. No, I had gone for Duncan Ferguson for those reasons alone, that he actually could be a professional wrestler. But if Ferguson's winning it, then who is first out?
So initially, I maybe thought Chris Doolin. Like, he seems quite nice, seems quite meek, which if, that's not going to do you anything. That's not going to do any good in the Royal Rumble. But then I was like, no, John McGlynn, because you could just steal his glasses. And then he wouldn't know where the attack was coming from. So he'd certainly be one of the first.
Do you know that scene in The Mummy when the guy loses his glasses and he's fumbling around for them and he gets absolutely bodied? That's John McGlynn. Somebody slaps him on the back of the head and then he's out. He's fumbling around like Velma from Scooby-Doo. No, I went for a man who looks more likely to get mugged off by the staff in a local timber yard, knows he's been mugged off but won't complain. Doogie Samuel, the Spartans manager. Yeah. That's what I went for.
Yeah, that
I don't
sense.
Know much about him. Seems like a nice enough guy, but he looks like the sort of person that he would get somebody in a coffee shop would give him the wrong change. Mm-hmm. He knows he's got the wrong change, but he wouldn't say anything about it.
He's just too nice.
He's just too nice.
Again, that is no good in the Royal Rumble.
Oh, is that the change? No, that's fine. Thank you. And he goes back to his room. I think they've given me the wrong change there. Go up and say something. No, I don't want to cause a fuss. Good manager. Really good season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now this is one from Ross Alexander. What do you think the biggest gap is between the leagues in Scotland? Given the number of teams that move up, the boring answer is probably the Premiership to the Championship. But I'd love to hear your thoughts as far down as the Highland / Lowland League and where the biggest jump in class is.
I know you said the boring answer is Championship to Premiership. I don't know if it is.
Oh, no, it is, man. That's the biggest leap. See, look at the... Who was it that was in the playoffs? Like, who did St Johnston beat in the playoffs? They absolutely demolished them. Was it Cali Thistle a couple of years ago? Yeah, it was. It was Cali Thistle. They absolutely obliterated them.
But did... I didn't go back to check, which maybe would have backed up my argument or obliterated my argument. But like, how often do newly promoted teams from the, like, teams that win the championship, how often do they come straight back down? It doesn't feel like they do it that often.
No, that's, I suppose, if that's what you, if that's what your recipe of success is, then that's a fair point. I'm trying to think who was the last team that was promoted and went straight back down. Am I having a discussion?
Dundee, maybe?
Dunfermline?
That might have been Dunfermline, and that was, my goodness, that was a long time ago.
It might have been Dundee. Did Dundee get promoted? I'm trying to think when that time that you got absolutely slagged off by Charlie Adam. Yeah, yes, that's right. They went up under McPake.
Straight
by the playoffs,
yep.
Straight back down, and that's when Mark McGee threatened to take all his clothes off. Turn off the heating, stop eating, take all his clothes off.
I think the biggest leap is from League One to the Championship.
I can see you thinking behind that.
Because you're generally, like, I know it doesn't quite work out exact now, but generally speaking, you're going from a part-time league to a full-time league, and that, by definition, is like a massive leap. And I know we've seen loads of good examples of part-time teams making a really good fist of it. That almost feels like certainly something that's maybe happened the last 10 years. I think before that, part-time teams really struggled in the Championship. So maybe, as I suppose we've discussed at various points, it isn't quite, being part-time isn't quite the impediment that it used to be. But I still think that is the biggest leap in Scotland.
I wonder about the. I suppose you could also say the team that, if you're looking at the gap between the Lowland League, the Highland League, and the SPFL, I suppose your barometer for that is that every team that has come up since the leagues were opened up is all gone on to have some degree of success. And I know that success is a funny thing in this regard, because there are some teams that pay a lot of money, like Kelty, Cove Rangers pay a lot of money. And Cove Rangers went into the championships, I suppose. But that's the interesting thing, because I don't think these are, I've said that before about Kelty. They might have been like a Lowland League club, but they weren't like a Lowland League team, if you know what I mean, the amount of money that was paid them. So it's quite difficult. I mean, I look at that, for instance, this East Kilbride team, who have just signed yet another player earlier today. They brought in Sean Fagan from Albion Rovers, and they don't feel like a Lowland League team. So it's hard to put your finger on. You can spend your way out of that division. I suppose you can spend your way out of any division. It's
difficult. I think in terms of, if you wanted to put this discussion all the way down to the Lowland League, it's quite difficult, I suppose, because in terms of, in general, I think the jump from Lowland League to League Two is the highest. However, in terms of ambitious clubs... And in inverted commas, yes. Then no, there isn't a big difference between them and clubs in League Two. But in general, the Lowland League is terrible.
I quite feel like I'm quite qualified to talk about this, and I've spoken about this a number of times in this podcast, was when Stephen Swift was building his very first team at Stenismuir. He signed a number of players from the Lowland League, 6 players from his BSC Glasgow team, somebody from like East Stirlingshire, Craig Reid, who'd won the league at Kelty Hearts, to be fair to him. And you saw that for a lot of these guys, that the step up was just too good, from the step up in fitness, the step up in quality. People like to say, oh, there's not much difference between these divisions. There is. And maybe the mistake was taking too many of them at the same time. So effectively, you're not raising... So if you take one or two of these guys who are the better players, you bring them in with the experienced SPFL players, they get raised to the standard of the SPFL. But it felt like with that Stenismuir team was that the team was getting brought down to a Lowland League standard. So I don't know if that's has that answered your question, Ross? Is that answered your question? What is the biggest gap? I'm not getting a definitive answer. What do I think the biggest gap is? Maybe it's somebody said this as well, that I saw that there was a discussion about it, I think it was in our Terrace Podcast WhatsApp group chat, that if Falkirk get promoted and no one else goes up, they basically swap places with Arbroath. You're kind of getting, and that was it, Livingston come down, Dundee United go up. You're kind of getting Scottish football based on like big teams all the way down to the smaller teams.
Yeah, because it's felt like for a while now, it's been unusually skewed in that you have teams in the Championship that you maybe don't expect to be there. You have teams in League One that you absolutely don't expect to be there that might drop in. Like, I know Raith do drop in there reasonably often, but you don't expect Falkirk to be there. Okay, Dunfermline have now done it a couple of times, but again, not a club that you would associate with League One. And you're right, next season it might be kind of where you would expect most teams to be.
He said about Queen's Park might be the outliers for that, but this is a different Queen's Park are sort of in a different realm now, given
Queen's
the
Park
fact 2.0. that they're full time and a lot less likable. But really, Sean, and anyone else listening, do check out the highlights of that game against Arbroath. It was, you know, this sort of thing. I remember my mum used to say that, oh, when it gets to two, they should just leave it at that. It's like, no, this was very much foot on the throat sort of stuff. Question for David Farquharson: if money was no issue, what would be the one thing that Sean and Craig would do to Starks Park and Oakleview, respectively, to improve the layout of the ground and therefore the match day experience?
So, at Starks Park, money no object. The places I actually used to watch the game from when I was wee and I first started going, you actually could no longer watch the games from there. So the railway stand used to be a stand all the way along. There's now only a small section towards the away end. They ripped all the seats out. Not really used. No really fit for purpose. They'd have to do a lot to that. But the other side, so see just behind the dugouts. So that used to be the enclosure. So that you used to be able to stand there and watch the game. But when they built, I think, I could be wrong with the timing here, but I think when they built those stands behind each goal, they raised the pitch.
Right.
So because they raised the pitch, if you were to stand in the enclosure now, rather than being like, I don't know, level with the park and just looking at it, you're almost kind of looking up.
Oh.
But again, it was like a brilliant place to watch football. And when I first started going, all the kind of kids, see, because there's like there's a wall that kind of ends next to the dugout. So there's two dugouts and then the wall continues. But the kids used to sit on the wall next to the dugouts. So you would have, like, maybe you and 10 others would be sitting there on the wall and they'd be the Raith Rovers substitutes and Frank Connor. And it was just like, I would never go next to the dugout because I was kind of too scared to go near Frank Connor and too scared of the subs. I was just too shy. It was always like the kids that were a wee bit more confident that would go right next to the dugout. But it was just a brilliant place to watch football. If they could, I suppose they could raise the ground where the enclosure used to be so that you're kind of at a decent level to be watching the football again. If that was usable, I would do that. And something that John Sim was like full of ideas, some of them awful, as we obviously are aware of. But I know that he was keen to use the railway stand as for hospitality.
Yeah.
So see if you could do something and have like a glass front, watch the game for there. The problem that you have there is any kind of construction work is limited by the fact that you've got the railway line directly behind. So again, I think that's a non-starter, but it's a shame that probably the two best areas to watch the football from at Starks Park are kind of out of bounds. So I would definitely do something with that.
It's Stennis Muir. I think Stennis Muir is a really good ground for lower league football. Mm-hmm. I think the Norway stand is good to watch football because it's quite steep as well. So I think if you go up the back, you actually get a very good view of the game. So I'm lucky my seat's in the back row there. So I get a very good view of the game most weeks. In fact, most weeks, every week, get a good view of the game every week. And I think that you've got the covered terracing behind the goal, the Donald Smiley enclosure, which again is another really good place to watch football. It's like very old-fashioned, proper, like old-school terracing, and that's where a lot of Stennis Muir's best goals have been scored into that and some really iconic moments. If I was to do one thing, however, to the ground, and this is something you might see this because we're going to hospitality at Stenny in next month, and I think about 3 weeks, we're going to go to hospitality for Stennis Muir versus Peterhead. I'd like to see the stand be like white, bigger. And what I mean by that is because the hospitality can be a bit narrow, the corridors can be a bit narrow. And I just think that sometimes in the hospitality can be a bit like cramped in. So I'd like to see if it was made bigger and the spaces like the Ormond Suite and the viewing gallery and so on, if they were made bigger, I think that would make a better experience for hospitality. I do think though that Stennis Muir on the whole is, I think I'm quite proud of it as a fan. I know it's certainly not the best ground in the lower leagues. It's not as good as, well, not as good as like Lynx Park or Gallabank or Gayfield to go and watch football, but I think it's probably in the second tier of nice grounds to go and watch. Aye, that's it. Maybe if I could as well, maybe like I'll put a wee covered, another wee sort of covered terracing behind the dugouts. I think that would be quite nice because they're a hut that's in there. I think that's used for five a-sides. I think that's how it's been a long time since I've been round the back there. It was used during the COVID period. The away team would get changed in there. But yeah, a nice sort of wee covered terrace in there so you could stand on the and see the game horizontally. If you know what I mean, you'd see it at the sideways rather than up and down. I don't know the technical terms. I'm so sorry, but you know what I mean.
No, wait, there's something about watching football in a stadium that is kind of dated, but dated well. That still has its own uniqueness and has its own quirks, rather than someplace like, I don't know, McDermott Park, for example, or Livingston. Yes, they're modernish, but my goodness, they're dull.
Yeah, definitely. That's why your Capolos, your Somerset Parks. I think that's going to be really interesting to see once Somerset Parks properly finished, because I think that's you're really getting the best of both worlds. You're getting the comfort of a modern ground, but it still has like the shed and the terracing behind one of the goals. And I think that's what you want. I think it's a tough thing to do right for supporters, where you still have that old school, otherworldly charm, but then bringing it in line with the modern era, because you need to sell hospitality. That's a really important revenue stream for clubs.
I was just going to say, I mean, Morton is so inspiring that you had, I forget his surname, Matt Callum, wrote that beautiful poem about it.
This was Callum McFadden, who subsequently blocked me on Twitter, actually, I think after he was discussed during this. Yeah, he was going through this period when he was first breaking into sports writing, where he gave off the pretense that he was a Greenock Morton supporter. Now, however, he got a job like being an audio commentator with Celtic, so he's a full Celtic supporter. He's apparently supported Celtic all his life, but when he was first getting into it, he wanted to give off the impression he was a Morton supporter. And he said this in a podcast with John Hughes. Right at the very start, John Hughes asked him who he supported, and he said Morton, and John Hughes made a joke about how, oh, Morton, etc. As you do when someone supports a more unusual football team. But no, it's since deleted from Twitter, but he wrote a poem called Capolo and recorded it with his voice. And for a while, this is a real peek behind the curtain at the kind of antics we get up to when we're filming A View from the Terrace, where you would say to someone, oh my God, Joe, have you heard this new interview that's just dropped with, I don't know, like Pedro Caixinha? Joe, no, I haven't. And you play it, Capolo. Saturdays at 3, it is the only place I'd ever want to be.
Remember that you kind of referenced that John Hughes interview. Remember I listened to it and then I tweeted him about everything that was wrong about it, all the inaccuracies, all the figures that was wrong, all the results that were wrong, and he tweeted back, thanks for listening. That's fair enough, I did listen. I gave him exactly what he wanted.
Aye, that's right. I mean, I think the guy was sussed out quite early on. I think I remember reading a post on the Morton forum where his sort of backstory and all that was a bit, his allegiances to the Ton was called into question a wee bit, but now he's working for Celtic, he's a proper Celtic supporter, and I don't doubt the fact, I mean, before I was blocked, I'm sure I would see him retweeted on the timeline quite a lot, like he is quite busy in terms of stuff, so I certainly can't fault his work rate, but even so. I'm a proper Stennis Muir supporter, that's, like I'm not putting that on as an act. Why would you?
Finally, sunscreen worthy of your skin. Sol de Janeiro's new Rio Radiance SPF 50 collection, where glowing hydration meets sun protection in a beachy and nostalgic set. Confidently embrace your glow with lightweight 100% mineral SPF body lotion, refreshing SPF body spray, and shimmering SPF body oil. Receive 10% off on your first order on soldejaneiro.com, plus free shipping with the code SPOTIFY10.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Question from Neil Taylor, Sean. If your lower league team could have an affiliation with a foreign club like in Football Manager, who would it be?
I mean, what would you want from this as a fan of a lower league club? You probably want, I mean, it doesn't need to be a big club. I think you probably want it to be from a country that is beautiful or sunny or both, so you can potentially get like a really cool friendly.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be good for them to come here, but it'd be even better if you could go there for a friendly. And you probably want some kind of link up so you can get exotic players from that team. So I know Wraith have, like, I know because they have their away strip because it's the 100th anniversary of getting shipwrecked.
Yeah, that's really cool.
They've done that thing with Las Palmas. Now, I'll be honest, there is a suggestion that Wraith will play a friendly in Las Palmas next summer, or this summer, come in. I get the impression that Las Palmas have just been polite in terms of their interactions on Twitter. So we'll see if that happens. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. I'm not sure, though.
Just imagine the sort of thing where they get in touch with the shirts. Yeah, that's cool. Listen, anytime you guys want a friendly, just give a shout. The next day, Louis Vuitton's turned up with two suitcases underneath his arm.
But see, in terms of, I think the most important thing, though, is being able to get exotic players. Because see, yes, if I could revisit any period of Wraith Rovers.
Calderon period.
Now, you've absolutely nailed it. Like, we weren't very good. So, like, yeah, we won the second division it would have been at the time. But we weren't very good in the first division. We're bad in the first division, actually. But the list, like, see the three Argentinians. See if you want a kind of peek behind the curtain in terms of the vibe at Starts Park. See if you Google Wraith Rovers players Baritza, and it's about 2003. So basically, they've been asked to turn up at the opening of a bar called Baritza on Kirkcaldy High Street. And it's the bar manager, don't know his name, then Antonio Calderon, and he took the three Argentinian players.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Martin Hugo Prest on the left, you have Ramiro Gonzalez, the goalkeeper, at the back, and then you have Christian Pitino on the right. Now, to give you an idea of what they were like, so I loved Martin Prest. Like, when he scored, he didn't score that often, but when he did, he would take his strip off, run to the corner flag, drape his strip over the corner flag, then rip it out the turf, and then just wave the corner flag about.
Brilliant.
Extraordinary. Ramiro Gonzalez once got dispossessed at the edge of his own area while he was doing keepy-uppies. Can't remember who it was against, who conceded. And Pitino was like a kind of Tesco value Lorenzo Amoruso. So you know how, like, Amoruso was ultimately he was a good defender.
A good stopper.
But he had a real terrible error in him.
Yes.
Imagine that in the third tier of Scottish football. Like a decent lump, I suppose, but every seven games would have an absolute disaster.
Brilliant.
But it's how they're dressed. It's how they're dressed in that picture. So Prest is wearing a suit jacket with a kind of aeroplane collar shirt that is over the lapels of his suit jacket. And Pitino is wearing, it's either a leather jacket or a denim jacket. I think it's a leather jacket. But that also has a massive collar that's made of fur. And that is the vibe that Starts Park was giving out in 2003. They weren't very good, ultimately, but I loved it. And if you could get exotic players like that coming to Kirkcaldy, again, it would just be probably not a very successful team, but I would love it.
Exactly. I mean, like, Nandy Mendy wasn't particularly good at Wraith Rovers, but we still talk about him very fondly.
Cult hero.
Cult hero. Mean, who would you rather talk about? You mean, do we talk about Tom Lang with the same degree of reverence? No, he's never played in the African Cup of Nations.
I doubt you will.
I remember tweeting out, when it was on the telly, I remember tweeting out, it was as Simpsons, you know, it's like when Homer's doing the voice of Poochie, and it was like, when Poochie's not on screen, the other character should be asking, where's Poochie? And I tweeted out watching it. Was it a Gabon did he play for? Guinea-Bissau? Was it someone like that?
Guinea-Bissau or Guinea-Bissau.
Guinea-Bissau.
Yes.
I tweeted out, when Fernandi Mendy's not on the telly, the commentator should be asking, where's Fernandi? And he actually tweeted me back. He said he saw it and tweeted back saying, give me a thumbs up. I was like, brilliant.
Do you know what was very disappointing though? See, when he made his debut for Guinea-Bissau. And then it said that they'd won 3-1, whoever they were playing. Goal scorer, Fernandi Mendy. I was like, oh, bloody hell, that's incredible. And it turned out that they had two Fernandi Mendys. So disappointing.
I'm always to get standing set up with the team. I'm with yourself, sure. I've got to think that there's probably the other team. There's not going to be much in it for them. Let's just be honest. There's not going to be that much in it for them. Do you want a team that are going to send you really, really good players that can toughen, so Stennis Weir can toughen them up and then put them down and they get a bit more experience? Or do you just want somewhere you can go and have a nice away day every summer? I've gone for the latter. I've gone for a nice place to go every summer. And I have chosen FC Trieste. And they are an Italian football team. They play in Serie C, third tier of Italian football. You can tell I'm reading that off Wikipedia just now. But the reason I've gone there, I couldn't tell you a single thing about them. I just always wanted to go to Trieste. I think it looks absolutely beautiful. So, you know, if you think of Italy, you've got a big long bit down the middle, and there's the big bit at the top where the mountains are next to Switzerland, France. Mm-hmm. It's like this wee enclave that curves around. It's like almost like sort of Croatia. I think it borders on Croatia. And I just think when you think of Italy, you don't necessarily think of these parts that border Slovenia and Croatia. And I just think that'd be quite a cool place. It looks beautiful going by the pictures. And I would like to go there. I'd like to go and watch Stennis Weir FC play there.
I thought you might have said maybe somebody in Norway, since there's that already that kind of odd link that you have to the nation.
Apparently it's very expensive, Norway, and judging by the sounds, I've got a ceiling to repair, so I can't afford to go to Norway at the moment, Sean. So maybe next year.
Trieste is beautiful but cheap.
I don't know. I haven't priced flights yet. I'm waiting for that link up between Stennis Weir and Trieste before I start investigating flights. Ian McMenemy, if you're listening, get on the case. Question here, Sean. This is from Richard Stephen Williams. Isn't that your names just all just first names? And that's the thing, they can all be moved around as well. But
that's how many first names work.
Yeah, but I mean, but you know, sometimes you get a first name that also works as a second name and vice versa. You never see someone with three names that could also be used as first names and last names.
I always say that you should never trust a man with two first names, like John Terry, for example. You wouldn't trust him. I've never put this into practice when it's three first names. We're really into the unknown here. He now has to write in and say, how trustworthy are you?
If Richard Stephen Williams said, I can give you a 15% return on your investment, would you go all in with him?
I would need to have more examples of men with three first names before I give him anything.
Well, this the question from Richard Stephen here is actually quite... I think we might have touched earlier, but this is kind of taken off on a different tangent. Despite the relative success of former Huntley boss Alan Hale, brackets left, do we think that we'll see another team emerge from the Highland League and ascend to the SPFL, or is the Lowland League just too strong now?
I see where he's coming from, but I don't know if after this season the Lowland League is going to be particularly strong. I mean, you've got East Kilbride, they're miles clear, maybe 12 points. But then
I think I've heard that people are just desperate to get rid of them because they have completely skewered the league.
But below that, I think it's Cumbernauld, Colts, Trenent, and I'm sure I read something about the fact that this is probably Trenent's last go at getting promoted. I think their owner is maybe leaving at the end of this season. You've got Bonesh, you've got Linlithgow. They're decent sides, but unless something changes between now and the start of next season, I don't see any of them kind of running away the division. I mean, like Hearts B are quite high. They might be second or third. So I don't know if, and bearing in mind we've already suggested that East Kilbride are the stickout, I don't know if the rest of the Lone League is that good. Even the team that wins it next season, I would fancy them far less than East Kilbride this time around. Whereas in the Highland League, like you think of Brechin, and I think the belief is that, well, Brechin will probably win this league and they'll be in the first round of the playoff against the Lone League. However, like, I think, is it Bucky that's maybe got three games in hand? Like, the Highland League is a lot tighter. So it might actually be that after this season, if East Kilbride do come up, maybe the position of power might swing to position of power. Maybe the likelihood of a team from the Highland or Lone League might swing towards the Highland League a wee bit more in the next two or three years.
No, I think you might be right. That mirrored my thoughts there. Yeah, I think that East Kilbride, as you said there, they perhaps give the impression that the Lowland League is a strong division, but they're miles ahead. They're a bit of an outlier in terms of the fact that they, as we mentioned, can just sign players. Any setback that they've had this season, and I appreciate that I've seen on Twitter Mick Kennedy, their manager, complaining about the number of injuries that they've had this season. Like, a number of players have actually had to go in for operations, and it does sound like a lot, but rather than rely on your coaching or whatever, you just sign more players. I don't think there's any team that could really afford to do that beyond them. So East Kilbride do skewer that division, and I think that in a couple of years, I think once you get rid of your Edinburgh University and Gretna, they seem miles behind everyone else, and you replace them with the likes of, say, Clydebank, for instance, were to go up, which would be pretty cool. Proper teams, and I'm using that like in quotation marks. I think you get a really competitive division. Ultimately, that's what you want. It's quite difficult to gauge the quality of it when one team's completely skewered than the rest. And you'd probably see them in the Highland League. I'm perhaps out of my comfort zone a little bit here, but the impression I get from the Highland League, it's effectively like three leagues within with the one, where you've got teams that are very, very well backed at the top, a couple of teams that aren't well backed, and then teams that are just miles off it at the bottom. So it's difficult to say. However, I would think that the teams that are well backed are perhaps better than the Lowland League equivalents, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean, but like certainly, I think, and again, we're certainly no experts when it comes to Highland League, but there is a belief that Brechin are a decent team. However, the top of that Highland League is much more tightly bunched than the Lowland. So if Brechin's decent, then there must be four or five teams that are at least very close or maybe even better than that. So I do wonder if maybe momentum swings towards a Highland League this season.
Highland League reminds me a wee bit of like the SWPL one, where you've got three teams in it that are just like miles ahead of everyone else, and they will win every single week. And it all just comes down to the matches. You might as well just like partition these teams off and just have them doing their own wee, like a three-way playoff, like a round robin. You might as well just do that. What's the point in seeing Rangers taking on like some Montrose or Dundee United or Aberdeen? Nah, just get them playing against Celtic and Glasgow City every week. And maybe that's what the Highland League should be looking to do as well. That was a good idea for the divisions. I remember at the time thinking that sounds absolutely garbage, but the more I think about it, that sounds all right. But you would have the league, it would split into three divisions of eight. Do you remember that? Where you had two large divisions and they would split off into three small divisions. I thought actually, at the time thinking, oh, that looks rubbish, but now having had a thought about it, that actually might look all right.
That middle division sounds dull.
Right, okay, that's a fair point, yeah.
Not a lot happening in that middle tier.
You're playing for pride. Something very important.
Class.
This is a question from Callum Kerr. Now, I don't know if it's the same Callum Kerr that starred as PC George Kiss in Hollyoaks. I was actually watching some clips of PC George Kiss in Hollyoaks. If it is the same Callum Kerr, Callum, you have got beautiful cheekbones. You're a very good looking guy. Terrible actor, but a beautiful guy.
Why were you watching clips of him?
Because we're cooking dinner earlier and was watching clips of Hollyoaks.
But specific clips of him?
No, not Callum Kerr. Just happened to be, because I always found the John Paul George Kiss storyline quite fascinating, so I go back and revisit it from time to time.
I like the fact that you said it, like when I said, well, why were you watching clips of Hollyoaks? And you went, well, because I was cooking. As if that's what everybody, like if you're just like rustling up some dinner, then everybody automatically watches clips of Hollyoaks.
I was watching, earlier this evening I was cooking my dinner, I watched a bit of Ouija's, watched a bit of Hollyoaks. Anyway, if it is the same Callum Kerr, that's incredible. It probably isn't. Imagine Callum Kerr's a reasonably common name.
Yeah, probably. There's more than one, put it that way.
Yeah, it's like in London, how you're never like more than 10 feet away from a rat. Mm-hmm. It's probably like in Scotland, you're no more than 10 feet away from somebody called Callum Kerr. Anyway, Callum asks, you're casting a new blockbuster film and need a main actor, supporting actor / sidekick, and a villainous character for them to go against. But you can only pick from current Lowland League players or managers. Who'd you pick for each role and why?
So I deviated a wee bit because I found this quite tricky. But in terms of, if this is a blockbuster and you want a star to lead it, to give yourselves a better chance of success, you want somebody who's popular in terms of your main actor. So I was thinking, right, so who is very, very popular at their own club and who is also very popular in terms of if a job comes up anywhere else in the lower leagues, this person is always linked. They always want them to join. So I went for Stuart Petrie as the leading man. And I know that, don't get me wrong, I mean, he's not old. He's not getting any younger. But if Harrison Ford can play Indiana Jones at whatever he is, 80, then there's no reason that, that Stuart Petrie couldn't replace him.
No, that's a very good choice. For my main actor, I just wanted charisma, razzmatazz, good looks. I wanted to basically recreate Jack Reacher. I've gone for Tom Lang.
Yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it?
The first scene, it'll be him in the shower. Mm-hmm. And it'll just be, he'll just be lathering himself up. Mm-hmm. All lots of smoke. He will have like sort of like as the credits are coming up, him mm-hmm. combing his hair. You never actually see his face properly, but he's sort of combing his hair. You see, it's like in Question of Sport, you know, where they had to maybe show you bits of him. That's what it'd be like for this. He's combing his hair. You see his bicep as he's doing something, mm-hmm. and then just the name of the movie, Lang, comes up, and it's him sort of stepping out of the shower. It's like we're fully clothed, and then into, and then he goes into his Jaguar, and then he's off to do his first mission.
So the name of the film is just his surname, his real surname.
Yeah. Written, directed, starring, produced by Tom Lang.
I mean, that's fair enough. That's fair enough.
Well, who's the sidekick then?
So I struggle. This is where I deviated, but I kind of struggled with this. I was like, right, so. Like sidekick, maybe you need maybe a young player, maybe someone who's going to be short. So I was trying to think of like a winger. Nobody was really kind of springing to mind. I was thinking like a Robin to
yes.
To show I've,
thought, Batman. I've thought the exact same.
But then I thought, well, wait a minute, it doesn't necessarily have to be like a Robin, a sidekick in that way. Like you'd have somebody that maybe, so other kind of, super, like the Punisher, for example, had somebody who maybe helped him with equipment mm-hmm. or weapons. Or if you watch Blade, he had somebody that
Chris Christopherson.
Yes, yeah. He had Chris Christopherson helped him with his equipment. So I thought, right, well, who within Scottish football would be good at constructing equipment? Who would be good, for example, in a shed? And I thought the guy at Arbroath that has two pairs of glasses. Because if you have if you have two pairs of glasses, you are good at cobbling things together in a shed.
I suppose you saw, what do these glasses do? And he throws them at something, they explode.
They're made of garlic.
for my sidekick, I actually went, and you know, like the sort of the Batman Robin type. Uh-huh. And I was thinking back to a podcast. I think it might have been you that was doing it with Fraser Clark. You were talking about Frankie Dean that plays for Edinburgh and the fact he's 5'2". That's why I put him in there. Is that the sidekick? Just he's really short.
That makes total sense. Absolutely.
I remember actually listening to that podcast and I text Fowler and I said, Fowler, I'm listening to this podcast. I have never seen anyone that's 5'2" in my life. I think Fraser Clark's at it. However, after Stennis Muir drew 1-1 with his five, I went to Sainsbury's, might have been in Leaven. Leaven and Methil are right next to each other. Yes. Am I right in saying that? Uh-huh. I think it was in Leaven. And when I was getting my shopping, there was a really short guy in the dairy aisle. So short, I actually had to put down my basket and send a text message to Fowler. So I was in the vegetable aisle. That's where I was, in the vegetable aisle. I had to send a text message to Fowler that I've seen a really short guy. I said it's in the vegetable aisle, and he thought I was joking, like just a really crude joke. I said, no. Genuinely, this really, really short guy was in there weighing an onion.
But it wasn't Frankie Dean.
It wasn't Frankie Dean.
Just another short man.
This guy was really old. This guy was really, really old. They're probably tall at some point, but he's just eroded like a cliff face. So who's the villain there? I'll tell you, sorry, Sean, one more thing. You know, you kind of wanted somebody who gives them gadgets. Uh-huh. No, that's really a good voice. I went for Pink Campbell. I think yes. He'd be sort of mm-hmm. like Lucius Fox type. Yeah, you know, just somebody who's just I'll go for Dick Campbell because that's two. I thought Pink Campbell. You can't have the real thing, so let's hire his non-union Mexican equivalent.
Still can't believe they're twins.
They look dissimilar to one another.
But they look really dissimilar, yes.
I don't know if you put Dick Campbell and Pink Campbell in front of me right now, I don't think I'd be able to tell them apart.
Okay, if you say so.
Okay, who's your villain then, Sean?
So initially I was thinking, like, there's a lot of villains of facial hair. Mm-hmm. And initially I thought, right, if you shaved Jim Goodwin's head, he would look like Ming the Merciless from the Flash Gordon film. But then I'm like, nah, I'm not having that. So I thought, right, who else is, because from my hero, I thought, right, who is very well liked throughout Scottish football? I thought, well, who's the opposite? And I felt it had to be Ray McKinnon.
Oh,
the snake.
Yes. Oh.
Judas.
There we go, the snake charmer. Mm-hmm. That's what it's like. Oh, that's what he does. there you go. Your hero goes to confront him in his garden. And because Ray McKinnon can manipulate things, a common garden hose suddenly becomes a cobra. And the guy's wrestling with the cobra, and then that's where the snake charmer makes his escape.
I was just thinking, why would Stuart Petrie be after Ray McKinnon? What crime has he committed? What could he have stolen from Scottish football that makes sense? I think maybe he could have stolen Jim Leishman's gold chain.
His promised chain, that's it. And Stuart Petrie, the Dunfermline legend's been sent him to rescue it. And that's the thing. So he confronts him in his garden and says, "Oh, you think you can come after me, Petrie? Well, here's something with a little bit of bite." And then all of a sudden, Petrie's hallucinating and thinks this garden hose is a cobra and wrestles it like one of Steve Irwin's fancies.
Hopefully it comes out better than Steve Irwin did with that manta ray.
Well, it's just as well that Stuart Petrie's come against the snake charmer and not the manta ray.
There you go, this film is coming together nicely.
Well, yeah, I was thinking of a villain and a secondary villain. I was thinking along like Die Hard. And since he's grown his beard, Michael McIndoe looks a bit like the guy in Die Hard who does the cocaine and tries to schmooze with Hans Gruber. You know the guy I'm talking about?
Is he really a baddie though? He's just a suck up.
I'm sorry, Michael McIndoe, you've got a beard. You're going to... You get involved and then you overplay your hand and then you ultimately become collateral in this villain's quest for Tom Lang. But I was thinking of, it's a common trait that we see in these films where the villain, and it's a shame because it shouldn't be like this, but the villain has some form of deformity. I don't think that's right. You shouldn't link villainy to deformity in people's appearances, but I'm going to do it in this instance here. And I was thinking I don't want to mention anyone who's deeply unattractive. That's not fair. I'm trying to think who's quite nefarious then. Oh, I'll tell you what, I'll just pick Ray, I'll pick the snake charmer as well. It can be like the Lang metaverse. That's it. The snake charmer exists in different universes.
There you go, that's how it's sorted.
There we go with Pink Campbell giving advice and Michael McIndoe as the secondary villain. This is good, actually. This idea of just up at Station Park, like what's the new manager? They're the same. He's a bit of a snake pit as always, and then he's got cobras and stuff coming out of his sleeves, and then somebody comes to the door, and all the snakes disappear up his arm. Yes, you good for training, Ray? Yes.
He's like Medusa.
Yes, there we go. That's it. He's combing his hair, and then all of a sudden, you're, shh. This is brilliant. This is, I'll tell you who the villain. Paul Hartley would be the villain. There we go. Paul Hartley would be the villain in mine. Trying to think what his crime would be. Oh, there you go. There's Tom Lang going to bat for Falkirk after Paul Hartley ruined them. There you go.
You see, this is brilliant. I think a lot of people would say it's shit.
I think that, Sean, that's another bonus episode. You and I are going to, for an hour, discuss how we make Lang. Or maybe you could team up Lang and Petrie together, the grizzled old, with a really good-looking guy. And then Frankie Dean as somebody who works at base.
Or it could be a TV series, which is like a kind of remake of Minder.
Oh right, who was in mind? Is that the one with the police officers?
Sweeney. But no, I mean the Sweeney was before my time. I remember the Minder when I was wee. But like I had Dennis Waterman, who was like a kind of younger guy who was the Minder, and then I had the older guy who was the kind of wheeler dealer that needed protection, I suppose.
Right. Okay, so there we go. So this is one for the listeners. If you want to hear me and Sean talk more about Lang. let us know, post in the Discord, post on Twitter, just send me and Sean the word Lang, and Sean and I will get working on a screenplay based on the cast of characters around Scotland. That's unfortunately, that should have been the last question. That would be a good way to go out. Now, I got one from Ross here. Since the Terrace have adopted a Cove-style hybrid model, which lower league journeyman, past or present, would you pick to join Fowler as the podcast's second full-time signing?
I really struggled with this one. I was thinking of, like, we really want somebody who is eloquent, but maybe you want somebody who's a wee bit controversial as well. Maybe drag in listeners.
Yes.
I kind of felt, who was controversial that people really disliked? So just before we started this podcast, I realised that I'd never heard them speak before, and I went and listened to Josh Falkingham, and he might have the worst accent and voice I have ever heard.
Oh, I didn't like it when they beat their bed players, went tough to me at East End Park that time.
So we can't have him. Can't have him at all. Then I was trying to think, well, who else is just being a laugh for like daft reasons that might get in listeners just because of his past? Then I remember that Andy Rogers got banned for calling five people mutants. But I didn't know if that was enough. And then what I did, I was like, right, last throw of the dice here. And I was trying to remember who was particularly good, because you'll know better than me. I was like, for the Pearly podcast. So I Googled it to try and bring up all of the episodes. Am I right in saying that they've vanished?
Yes, I didn't pay the SoundCloud subscription. So, I need to fix the ceiling. That's why. That 8 quid a month. I need to fix this fucking ceiling.
So you know what? Ultimately, I don't think I have a definitive answer for that. So I hoped you maybe had some kind of shortlist, and I could maybe pick one from it.
I've got an answer now. It's not necessarily a football player, Sean, but funnily enough, my criteria was the exact same as yours. You want somebody who's well-known. I'll draw on the listeners. Somebody who's good at writing, just in case the Terrace wants to diversify. Somebody who's good at podcasting, very important. Someone who's... Jeez, oh. Looks like he plays like keyboards in New Order now, Tam McManus. You know, he's got that sort of look about him. But somebody who's good at podcasts, somebody who's good at multimedia, someone who's got opinions and wants to share them. Jim Spence. That's who I would like Fowler to make a come and get me play at. Jim Spence. Fowler, I know you'll be listening to this. Give him a shout. Get him involved. Put me and him in the same podcast.
However, if we use Jim Spence, we have to use the... I'm saying that we have to do it. By all means, bring him on board. But we have to use the original picture that the Courier used to use for his columns, which used to run down the full length of the page. Oh. And it was him with his arms folded
against his legs, the post. Like, yes.
His legs were kind of crossed, but he was wearing flared jeans.
Yes.
An incredible look.
Yes, he looked like, if you saw him from down below, you would think, this is a man who all his other jeans are in the wash. And if you looked at him from the waist up, you think, this is a man who's going to judge a livestock competition. So a remarkable combination that he had on there. Fowler, get him in. Me and Sean have spoken. Get the big man in.
I've listened to him on a couple of podcasts, and my goodness, he can read a league table. And that is exactly what we need.
I was about to say, there's a lot of stuff like, so how do you think Stuart Peach is getting Montrose? Well, he's got them in fourth place at the moment, which is really good for Montrose.
That's exactly what we need. Fowler, if you're listening, we know you are. Make
Sign
contact.
Him up. Sign him up. I think that'll do us, Sean. We've had a good run at it. If you want to continue to support the Terrace, please jump over to our Patreon page. We have got three tiers. And I think most importantly, there is hours and hours and hours of content going up on the Terrace. I listened to a really good podcast earlier today. It was Robert Borthwick and Tom Watt eulogising about Mark McGee's time at Aberdeen. No, when he got sent to the stands at Pittodrie that time. Beg your pardon.
A real highlight.
Yeah, so it was quite funny. Enjoyed listening back to that. I laughed out loud a couple of times at it. So that's good. And there's just loads of good stuff going on. Duncan Mackay is doing a book club. So if you want to hear Duncan talk a lot, and I'm sure you do, sign up. Simple as that. But Sean, we will go and record this Patreon about this horrible game of football. But please, enjoy your football. But unlike the snake charmer, just do so respectfully. Just do so respectfully. There you go, Sean. Somebody's running clean through and goal, and all of a sudden they get bitten by an adder. How did that get there?
It really is. An adder, not the British snake that doesn't bite.
No, but he's in control of all... Oh, does adder not bite? Well, then, I don't know. Pythons don't bite. Cobras, has everyone got to be much traced back to cobras?
Listen, I mean, he can do anything he wants with snakes. He controls them.
He can do anything he wants. Like, somebody's clean through and go, and they get bitten in the ankle by a poisonous snake. There we go. Take care. We'll see you soon. Cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.